You know, as you look over this past year, I want you to take a moment and reflect on something. What were the moments in this past year where you felt most alive? I mean, alive. If I make you uncomfortable, it's a pregnant pause. But when did you feel the most alive? You know, I find that for many of us, we talk about living, but most of us, I don't believe, really spend most of our time living. Most of us spend most of our time surviving. I mean, our brains are going like on. You feel like you're always on. Yeah, some of you know exactly what I'm talking about when I said you're always on. It's always, I got to perform. I got to keep things in order. Many of us, you know, worry about this thing or that thing, and our brains don't come to a place of peace where life can be, but we are afraid. Some people call fear anger, but I've come to the conclusion after my 70 years, most people who are afraid really are angry. You know, they show it in anger, but they're really afraid. They might say, I'm just angry. I don't like what's going on. But really what that means is they're scared to death that somehow it's going to change out of their control, and they're afraid of that control, and they change the fear into anger. You know, all that stuff, those are all legitimate emotions, but they all tend to lead you to survival rather than into life. So when was the moment this past year when you were the most alive? You know, I had to think long and hard for that one. And the time that I think I was the most alive, believe it or not, was when I was on vacation at the end of August and I was down in the Florida Keys. It was one day when, actually after everybody got there and I got everything unpacked and I got everything set up and I had everybody taken care of, that all of a sudden we went fishing. Now, I was with Sally and I was with Ian, my son, and I was with his best friend, Frank, and then this other friend of his that I had just met that day. We went offshore. I mean, we were in a 23-foot boat, and we were offshore. You know, you have a rental boat. You aren't supposed to go more than 10 miles out. Well, we went 24, you know, and we were out there. I couldn't see land. I couldn't see anything, and we were after dolphin, and the dolphin were running, and we did well fishing. But a lot of the day, because we left before dawn and we didn't get back till, you know, it was just about ready to get totally dark, that whole day wasn't spent fishing. A lot of the day was just cruising around looking for fish, looking for weed lines, looking for debris that was there, looking for, you know, where the schools were. But there were times on that day that I felt totally alive. I mean, I was just so filled with joy. I was just so grateful. I mean, I was like overwhelmed. I mean, you know, as I had to apologize because Sally was at the 8:30 service, and I looked at her, I said, sorry, but, you know, I was really happy to be with Ian and Frank. I mean, Frank was like another son to me, you know, and they grew up, you know, in my house, and, you know, I'd take them surfing, and it was so much fun because I knew them when they were, you know, 10 years, 11 years old, 12 years old, taking them surfing and going here and seeing them get through college and seeing them getting families and seeing them growing up, and here I was with them, and we were out on this boat in the middle of nowhere looking for fish. It was quite simple, but I was so filled with joy and gratitude. I was right in the moment. It was like I wasn't thinking at all about the fact that, number one, if we break down, we're really screwed up, you know? Because I'm not supposed to be this far out, and I'd have to call a Coast Guard because CETO's not coming out here. I didn't think of that. I was just right there in the moment. I was in the moment, and I was totally honest with everything. Nobody knew all the details that were going on in my life, but I was honest. I was just real. You see, to me, that's what being alive is. But that life comes to us in a very, very special way. It doesn't just come to us automatically when we're born. I think there's a dynamic that takes place that we've got to go through to sort of embrace the life and letting go of just survival. And you can't do it 24/7, probably. was reminded of that when I read this gospel that, to be honest with you, since I probably was somewhere around 8 years old, I had to memorize. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning. All things came into being through him. I'll never forget remembering, thinking, wait a second, this says it in the beginning. There's another book in the Bible that says in the beginning. It's the book of Genesis. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. But then all of a sudden, in John, we get, in a sense, in the beginning, Jesus was present, the Word. Now, the word Word is really the word Logos. It's not for trying to mean the Bible. It's not trying to, you know, be anything. It's more like an eternal thought. It was something that both Greeks and Hebrews would totally understand, that this eternal thought, this thought of God, that's a mystery, sort of is issued forth to become like you and me. And he was there. In the beginning was the Word, but he was there since the beginning. In other words, the thought of God, Jesus, was there since the time when the heavens and the earth were created. It was always there. He was in the beginning. And all things came into being through him. Everything came into being through him. But then it says this: what has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light of all people. What came into being was life. Well, you know, when you're reading this, the people who were reading it that day, you know, well, what do you mean? He's trying to say that I'm not alive? Yeah, that's what he's trying to say. That without that connection to the Father through the Son, you're really not fully alive. You're not alive. And if you bypass that, where you get distracted because of worry, fear, anger, you know, preoccupation, whatever, then truly, you're just surviving. Because you're missing the whole point of it. You're missing what God came into this world for, to be alive, filled with joy, filled with grace, filled with compassion, filled with forgiveness, knowing that you are right with him. So you have a chance to be right this way too. Don't forget, you got to get that vertical hold straightened out right first so that you can have that horizontal hold go right. Then the contrast comes in and it's picture perfect. You see, that's what I think that the Gospel of John is trying to say here. That Jesus came into this world so that we could be right with God and right with each other. But most of us want to be right with God, and to tell you the truth, we want to be right with the people that we agree with. Doesn't say that that's what it's supposed to be. So when you're with people who don't agree with you or are different than you, then to tell you the truth, well, I'm going into survival. And that's not what God calls us to do. It's interesting because the rest of this reading, the 18 verses, talk about, you know, what he just goes on to say many more things. He kind of ties in to John the Baptist, that John came before him, but John wasn't the light, that he pointed to the light. And then it says, and the Word became flesh and lived among us. If you translate that from the original Greek, you know what it says? And the Word became flesh and pitched his tent with us. You want to really get to know somebody else in your family? Go camping with them. And what it says very clearly is that God comes and camps with you. It's an allusion back to the Exodus. Because there, how did God travel? You know, fire by day? You know, I mean, you've got where, I mean, cloud by day, fire by night. He was with them all the time, but he stayed in a tent. And what he's saying is, I came and I tented with you. You see, to be alive means to be with God. And yet most of us only want to be with God, well, when we need him. But how many of us really want to be with God on his terms, not our own terms? How many of us, you know, really want to be living out our faith on his terms, not our own terms. I mean, how good are you at grace? I mean, when it doesn't go your way, when somebody interrupts your schedule, when you want to do what you want to do, and somehow something comes in, sort of interrupts it, do you have the grace to say, well, maybe God's in this? Or do you simply say, I want my own way? You see, grace and forgiveness, compassion, are all the things that really reflect whether you're close to God or not. And if you don't have a whole lot of compassion, if you don't have a whole lot of grace, if you got to be right all the time instead of being righteousness of God, then to tell you the truth, then you probably aren't reflecting the light too much. You know, I won't say you don't have the light, but if you do, you're putting a bushel bag over it. Because it's in that place of living that all of a sudden the joy comes through. I have to say about my own self, you know, I wonder how many times I'm actually fully alive. Most of us get sidetracked. We don't mean to. I don't think, you know, forgive them for they know not what they do. But most of us get sidetracked, you know. We get into things, to be honest with you, that sort of, well, we got to do it this way, this way, this way. I got to have this and here. You know what that truth, what that is addiction. Whether it be an addiction of just normal sort of routine or whatever, but it's an addiction because if you don't feel at home in your own skin because you don't have it your way, then probably the truth of the matter is you're probably trying to fill yourself and getting yourself comfortable with yourself within your own skin in a different way other than God. Because God interrupts everything all the time. You know, I remember getting in about 30 years ago now, you know, into recovery from alcohol and trying to learn what it was like to live in my own skin. I mean, a lot of my life, and at that point, and some of you know this, I was a priest at the time when I got into recovery from alcohol. I'd already been ordained for 2 years, you know, and I'll never forget, you know, coming into that place where I said, look, I always used sort of alcohol to make myself feel okay. I could have joy, but it was like, I could have joy if I knew that somehow I was okay in my own skin. Well, to do that, I probably had to have a couple of drinks. And all of a sudden, I got sober. I took away the thing that used to make me able to be at home in my own skin. So I had to relearn and recover from what I'd learned how to survive, and I had to learn how to live. I'll never forget being with a man who was, he wasn't my sponsor, but he was a good friend that was in the program, had been in the program for a lot of years. And we went out to lunch one time, and we were at Brandywine's, which is a delicatessen down there by St. Margaret Mary's, right on Park Avenue in Winter Park. And I was sitting there eating, you know, lunch with him, and all of a sudden, he looked at me, and he's talking to me about the program. I'd only been in for maybe 3-4 months. And he looked at me, and he said, you see that guy over there? And I said, yeah? I said, who's he? He goes, that's the guru of AA. And I said, the guru of AA? He goes, yeah, I want to introduce you to him. So I went over and I met this guy that was the guru of AA. His name was Brock Steele. And I walked up to him and I was introduced to him, and they introduced me as a priest from All Saints Church. And he goes, you know, that's really interesting that you're from All Saints. He goes, I have an appointment with your rector today, because I want to make sure that I can get buried at All Saints, out of All Saints. I want to get, he goes, I was the senior warden, which is the lay head top dog in the church. I want to get buried out of there, and I was the senior warden for years, you know, at All Saints. But I left a while back. He looked at me and he started describing all these other rectors from All Saints that had become bishops, and he said, I drank with every one of them. I said, well, that's something to brag about. And I looked at him, I said, look, I can guarantee you can get buried out of there. He goes, isn't it funny how God, if you stay with him, leads you to the right place, to the right people, and everything comes together. But you got to listen, and you got to follow. You know, it's funny because as the months went by, I'd see Brock off and on. He didn't die for a couple of years after this instance, but as the months and years went by, I'd run into him in Park Avenue. And I'll never forget one time sitting on a bench with him, And he said, Jim, come over here, sit down. And he said, I've been reading this book, Sermon on the Mount by Emmett Fox. I've read it 1,000 times, but I read it again. And then he pulled out this handwritten sheet of paper, and he said this. He said, I've come to the conclusion that for me to stay with my higher power, for me to stay in contact with God, so I'm good with God and I'm good with myself, and then I can be good with others. He said, I got to do 4 things. He said, number one, I got to keep it simple. Number two, I got to live in the moment. Number three, I got to be honest. And number four, I got to be grateful. If I do those 4 things, that somehow I know I come into relationship with my higher power. You know, it's interesting. I've come to the conclusion in my own life, if I want to be in a relationship with God through Jesus Christ, I got to keep it simple. I can make things complicated really easy. My brain just goes off. I have a hard time sometimes living in the moment. Because when you're living in the moment, you're right in the moment. You're listening to exactly what's going on. You're experiencing everything else, and your mind isn't already making your list for what you got to buy at Publix before the crowds get there. Your mind is right present, right here, right now, and there's nothing that is distracting you to where you're worried, afraid, lonely. You just know you're present. You got to be honest. That doesn't mean you got to share every detail with everybody. Trust me, you don't want to know all the details of my life. But you got to be honest with yourself and honest with God. And honestly say when I just don't feel comfortable. I'm scared. It's okay, but don't pretend you're not when you are. But most of all, you got to be grateful. Grateful even when you feel like, I really want to be resentful. But you got to go and you got to muscle your way through it and say, God, give me the ability to be grateful even when things seem to be falling apart. Because it's in there that all of a sudden things start coming together again. Because it's in there that all of a sudden the faith, which is a gift of God, that by the way, you all got. That's when you start unwrapping the present. Question is, most of us have been given the gift of faith, but most of us either have unwrapped it when we need it and then wrapped it up again, but we don't leave it unwrapped. We don't let it keep going, because that faith then is a trust that comes with inside ourselves that becomes alive. And when it becomes alive, then we become alive, and we no longer settle to survive. Take a look. Take an inventory in yourself. How many times are you just surviving? I mean, in everyday life. Do it just once today. When you drive out of here and you get in traffic, are you living or are you surviving? When you got to wait on somebody else, or a family member isn't as nice to you as, well, I think they should be, you probably go right into survival. But when all of a sudden, when the outside circumstances that aren't going your way, you say, I'm not going to be controlled by that. I'm going to be controlled by the power that's greater than me, by the name of Jesus, who is the Word, who is in the beginning, and who came to give me life. I'm going to listen to him. Then all of a sudden, there is a peace that passes all understanding. There is a gift of faith that opens inside you. There is a mystery that unfolds in front of you that you don't have to have your fingers into, but you can hold on to like this, and you can forgive. Most of the time, yourself the most. But if you forgive yourself, then it better extrapolate out and letting other people see it. Otherwise, it probably isn't true. Because you see, Moses did come to bring the law. But Jesus Christ came to bring grace and truth. And grace and truth isn't something that you hold on and have to be on for. It's where you can say, I'm okay just as I am. Because he's accepted me just as I am. And now that he accepts me just as I am, I want to be as he would have me be, so that I can move through and I can be graceful in the midst of the most difficult situations. That I can forgive anybody that I can have compassion for people who are different than me that have the wrong opinion. That I can be what God wanted me to be, and that's all that really matters. Then you're alive. It doesn't take going offshore 24 miles beyond where you're supposed to be to get there. But I sure am glad I had that experience, because if I ever get really stuck, that's where you can find me. Because it was there that all of a sudden the simplicity, the honesty, the moment and living in that moment and the gratitude really materialized in front of my face. You got a new year ahead of you. You got another chance to get it right. What are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with it? Is this year going to be a year filled with life? Or is this year just going to be where you survive the things to get through to next year? As you come to the Eucharist this day, I pray that you choose life. Life in all its fullness. Because that's what Jesus came to this world to give us. And that's who does give it to us. And that's who will help you unfold that gift of faith that is within you. It's in his name that we pray. Amen.